Here we go.
It's the first quarter of the big game. You want to toss up a Hail Mary.
They've done studies, you know. 60% of the time, it works every time.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween.
Look, my friend, this is just where you and I differ.
Grow up, Peter Pan, Count Chocula.
If my answers frighten you, Vincent, then you should cease asking scary questions.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. We are live.
Lauren Wolfpack, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. S&P futures up 27. NASDAQ futures up 190. Just when you thought we can't go any higher, we're going a lot higher, it looks like. At least as of today or this morning. You know, you never know about these things. But any thought that somehow or another, I think that the amount of money coming into the system is so dramatic, and I don't know what. I think our friend Chairman Powell has pretty much abdicated any sort of attempt at inflation, and with the pressure that's on him, I can't say that I totally don't understand, but I don't know. At some point, I don't think he should resign necessarily, but I think we're definitely going to a Weimar type of situation where we're really, really going to, you know, absolutely reward the hell out of the people who own stuff and to the point where nobody else will ever get to own anything again. I mean, I think that's kind of where we're at. It may be a little extreme, but this stuff is very, very serious, and I don't know that people necessarily can't understand it, necessarily want to understand it, nor can you do anything about it. So that's kind of leaves you with a, what's the point? Well, you know, let's go play golf. Why am I even thinking about it, sort of thing. So, you know, that's where that all is. But, you know, we'll see where that all shakes out. We got gold at $39.67. And everybody knows I have a lot of people. When I say a lot of people in the gold stuff, you know, we have a lot of clients from all kinds of different walks of life. And sometimes we have some people that came in as clients maybe 2-3 years ago and had pretty much all their money in their 401k plans and stuff in stuff like whatever the funds they happen to be in, Magellan or whoever it is.
You mean S&P funds?
Yeah, I mean, whatever brand their 401k happened to use.
Yeah.
They were pretty much all in all these funds. So when they came to us, you can't really hedge for somebody something somewhere else. I mean, you could if they gave you the cash. You could buy the puts, but people don't really do that. And you can't sell calls because they're not covered because the underlying is some other place. So a lot of times people came here and they said, well, gee, we want to do something different. And, you know, we've heard about the metals or, hey, they haven't gone anywhere. So for whatever reason, a lot of it's because people have other stuff, other places in 401k. I personally have a lot of people that are in the metals that if I would have had everybody's entire account, I don't think the percentage we would have in the metals would be anywhere near that high. It's all because they had stuff other places. Because when you get somebody's account, and Jimmy, you understand this. When you get somebody's account, you don't just, somebody says, hey, you know, here's $250. The first thing you say is, okay, what does the whole situation look like? I mean, because you need to trade for the client. You don't just, I mean, other places would just take the $250 and put it in whatever it is for everybody else. And that's what 99% of the places do, don't you think, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, whatever their plan is, you're in it. And there's nothing really wrong with that because they'll tell you what the plan is, and if you sign up for it, you sign up for it. I mean, it's not like it's crooked or anything. But anyway, So we have a lot of people in the metals. And I mean, we've been in there for several years. And I always thought that the gold miners, for whatever reason, were essentially lagging the gold itself, because gold had started to rally a little bit. And we have people, and we never learned in the silver miners so much. We did for a while. You do get in the silver, wheat, and things like that. But we pretty much have people mostly in the gold miners, and in, when I say we, that's what people wanted to do. And this is a small subset of stuff we do. We got all kinds of other people just in other things. But all of a sudden this year, the lagging gold miners has gone from like 32 to 78. And we've been dragging the puts along. But we also have made some money on some call spreads to the upside by kind of doubling up on the upside. But now, Jimmy, the thing's 78, for God's sake. I mean, it started the year at 32, and if I were to use my old chief trader instincts, I would say, what are we doing still long here? I mean, this is nuts. If you liked it at 32 and now it's 78, what are you doing? Yet, to my credit and to my clients, I think good in terms of money, instead of thinking so much like a trader, it's not up to me to realize to decide the political system. But for years, I thought they would never do this constantly. I mean, they would never pour money in the system and essentially screw people that don't own stuff just for their own benefit. But now that's exactly what's happening. So I have no intention of getting out of this stuff at 78. Now we'll continue to have our puts dragging a few points behind, just in case. But I think these guys are just starting with this money. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, I was having dinner with my dad, and I had
the GDX. Explain, your dad's been a 70-year man in the business. He's not just a regular old dad.
No, he isn't. He was on Wall Street. He has been a broker, investment banker, pretty much a man of all hats. And he had mentioned that if you had thought the gold stocks would be up at the beginning of the year 45%, he said you would have been nuts.
Well, first of all, they're up 100 and something.
Right. He said you would have been nuts. He just, it defies what, you know, people think. And it's going on now. He thinks in the next couple of months we're going to have a bear market. He does not see how the market can keep going higher. Newton's law has to go into effect at some point.
What does he think will be the catalyst, though? Because I mean, every day there's more money.
Shutdown.
Really?
He thinks the shutdown. He thinks that the shutdown is not going to be resolved quickly. It'll be. It might take a couple of months, and that's really going to affect the overall market, because the market's always looking ahead. Oh, I agree. He also thinks that at that point, you know, the Fed can't be putting that much money in because there's nobody there to put it in. You got all these people laid off. You have all these people, you know, this and that. But we'll see. I guess the...
Well, if I were to have lunch with him, by the way, he thinks a lot like I do. But the question is, I mean, and I'm sure that the days he was managing money for people, if you see a stock that's way higher than you think it ought to be, or way lower, you look at it and you say, this thing's way lower or way higher than it ought to be. But all of a sudden, you got to be like, you know, Vito Corleone and say, okay, why are the people driving it this high or driving it this low? What do they see that I don't? If I were to question your dad, I would say, you're falling back to this same mentality as me. It's always nice to be able to quiz somebody that agrees with you, right? I'll say you're dropping back to the same mentality as me, in that somehow or another, the economy does not match the stock market. And your dad's mentality, like mine, by the way, is someday, somewhere, those two are going to match up. We're going to come back from somehow to the mean there. Yet, the first question I would ask him, well, gee, Jim's dad, how do you explain COVID, where we absolutely shut the place down and the market went up the whole way because all we did was throw money in it? I wonder what his answer to that would be.
That's a good question. You know, he clearly would agree with you. The government during COVID, you know, basically funded the shutdown.
With printed money.
With printed money. And at some point in time, you know, we will get inflation. And he thinks that we could be back to the 70s. You'll see double-digit inflation, double-digit interest rates.
I think he's right about that.
And we could be in a stagnation for a while.
Stagflation.
Stagflation.
It's hard to say. Flation. Say that 10 times in a row fast. Can't do it.
Nope, I can't.
I can't either. The thing that's sort of weird on this is I don't understand the somewhat blindness of people, because really a lot of the inflation now, we're not just talking about inflation, we're talking about taxes. I mean, I wish people, and I was with, I don't know, 2-3 people this weekend that don't want to listen to me, which is fine. I don't know if you were winding around yesterday, if you were listening to News Radio 78, I was a little bit, they had a report on there regarding auto prices. And by the way, Jimmy, we talked about this last week. Somebody came out, who's the guys that do the auto price? It's not the somebody does all the new auto price surveys. In the last month, I think, or last month and a half, we're up 3.1%. So some guy was on yesterday talking about how, actually it was a lady, that not only are new prices up, but the price of parts due to the tariff are up astronomically. So it was up over 3% in September. He goes, wait till October. Now, for those that don't know, for those that, you know, always drive new cars, which is always nice, if you have something older, say you have a pickup from the 90s or something that still runs fine, and all of a sudden you need a new, like, rear light assembly. Well, you might get that from General Motors for, you know, $100 or more, or you can get it from somebody else, which I'm sure is foreign, Vietnam or some damn place, maybe China, but somewhere, for $20. And it's fine. It's almost an exact duplicate. They give you the bulbs and everything. But now that's going to be, what, 40? 45? And I can't even imagine somebody, you know, wrecking a side of their car or the front or rear and have to buy all these parts in an auto parts store, especially with all the new sensors and stuff. They have all of them. I don't see the average person affording any of that to you. And I don't understand how people don't understand. I don't understand how people can't get the grip on the tariff. You know, I explained this to a few people again Saturday, and out of date to listen. I said, Mercedes comes over here, the importer writes a check to the government. Really? The importer does? Yeah, Mercedes doesn't. No. The importer does. The importer might be Mercedes of America, but still, they send a check to the government, and now whatever their cost is of the car coming here is going to be what they paid whoever it was they bought it from, plus essentially it's a sales tax at the border. Oh, it can't be that way. Well, what do you think it is? Well, they're paying it. No, they're not. I mean, I'll tell you what, this is genius. I mean, you just put a huge tax on people and they don't think you did. I mean, it's I would have never thought of that, Jimmy. I guess I'm jealous. What do you think?
I think I'm reluctant to you. It is a tax. I don't know how you get around it, because you know as well as I do that the importer pays the tax, yes. But then they just increase the price of the part by that or a little bit more.
Well, they may or may not. I mean, but every part's different. Every piece that comes over is different. If it's something extremely competitive, the people on the other end, the exporter, where it's coming from, in order to sell anything, is probably going to have to eat some of the price or not send it, you know, one or the other. And the person here, the retailer, Walmart, say, in order for them to make it competitive, they may eat a little bit of it too. But it depends on whatever it is. I mean, I've tried to say this 100 times. If it's a shot of penicillin coming from India, and the import price is $2, and they put a 50% tax on it. Okay, you pay that guy $2, you send a buck to the government, but it's still $200 when it gets in your ass at Northwestern, right? The markup is on this end. It's not that big of a deal. Could Northwestern eat the dollar and only charge you, 197 profit instead of 198? Yeah, they probably could if they wanted to. But now, what if it's a cola nut? It is only grown in your farm in Rhodesia or someplace. You're not lowering your prices. You want the cola nuts, don't you? Okay, so the cola nut comes in at $100 a sack. Somebody has to pay a tax of whatever it is, 40% to the government. I don't see Walmart or Coca-Cola eating that one, do you?
No.
So it absolutely depends. Each and every item has its own story. And that complexity is not out there either. Anyway, let's talk about some sports. What do you think? If Toronto wins the World Series, are they going to go to the White House?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, well, the real question, will they be invited to the White House?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think that. Anyway,
they might not be invited.
For those that don't know, the games that are the Blue Jays are just whomping up on the Yankees, and the Dodgers are they're playing today, as are the Cubs. The Tigers are 1-1 with the Mariners. That was a good game. Boy, the Mariners had a big crowd there. They're a loud crowd. I mean, the weird part about this, Jimmy, is there's people that. That are really good ball players, and even though you and I watch a lot of baseball, and you've got tickets, so you go to a lot of them. Were the Blue Jays in Wrigley this year?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, there's these really good players, and even now at interleague play, I never seem to get this. I don't think I've watched the Mariners all year. I never saw Ichiro play, but that was before interleague play. I mean, I wish I would have to a large extent. I was a Cub fan from going way back. I never saw Mickey Mantle play. I never saw any of those guys. And so it was kind of, I did because I used to watch the Sox too. But these guys were rattling off all these people on the Blue Jays and what great ball players they are. And I didn't know any name at all, did you?
No. The last Blue Jay that I remember was Joe Carter when they won the World Series back.
Remember him because he came from the Cubs. It was the worst trade on earth.
Cubs have made some bad trades. I mean, you take Bruce Sutter, Bill Maddox, or even Greg Maddox. They've made. You start out with the Cubs, and you do better with someone else.
Well, those that don't remember, they gave up Joe Carter and Mel Hall to get Rick Sutcliffe for half a year. Now they won. Sutcliffe had a fantastic year, but then he was a free agent. I mean, If you would have eaten that year, you probably wouldn't have won they didn't win the World Series anyway. Okay, but they won, that was 1984, correct? And so they ended up with Sutcliffe, and they ended up signing him. Well, I would much rather have had Joe Carter, Mel Hall, and then signed Sutcliffe in the free market for next year. I think that team would have been a team for the decade, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Some guy comes up and he's just like this. I won't say. I mean, he doesn't look like he's Andre Dawson. He's some kind of schlumpy looking guy. look kind of like us. And the guy goes. Well, this guy's he's the best two strike hitter in all of baseball. And so the average major league baseball player with two strikes on him hits 170. This guy's hitting 275. That's higher than like 80% of the league total. And the guy's doing that on two strikes. Must be one hell of a hitter. Just saying. I never heard of the guy. Anyway, it's the Toronto leads 2-0. Tigers and Mariners are 1-1. The Tigers or the Cubs and the Phillies are playing tonight. And they're both the Phillies lead. LA leads 1-1, 1-0, right?
Right.
And the Cubs are down 1-0. So there you have it. So game two tonight. The Cubs aren't until 8 o'clock. The Phillies are 5 o'clock. So that's a little late. So the Dodgers are at 6:08 Philly time, correct? And the
yes.
And we're 9:08 Philly time. That's kind of late. But and then let's turn to football here a little bit.
Bears, before we get into football, Chief, a little football. Did you read about Mark Sanchez and this incident?
Oh,
he got stabbed, but he beat a 69-year-old man up.
And yeah, the guy was this was a
Indianapolis.
He's a sports guy, a reporter now, right?
Right, 38 years old.
I remember him. Where did he play?
He played with the Jets. He played with a couple people. Remember, he was one, like Matt Leinart, one of the Pete Carroll quarterbacks coming out of USC.
That's right. That's right. That's how I know the name. He was arrested, but he's the one stabbed, which is not usual. Doesn't mean it can't happen.
Well, they said that...
what did the guy stab him with?
I don't know. The guy pepper sprayed him and then stabbed him. Supposedly, they got in an argument, and Sanchez, obviously younger, bigger, and stronger, really beat up on the guy, and the guy claims he was self-defense, probably, and stabbed him,
just happened to have a switchblade on him.
Right, and the guy's still in the hospital, and Sanchez has, I think, been released.
Stabbings can be really nasty. Reason why I talk about a weirdo story. This is a long, long time ago, but some fireman in Chicago got stabbed on the 35th Street L stop. I don't know what the deal was, but he ended up going over to Michael Reese, which was still open, and my then girlfriend and contributor to the show, Robin, her brother was a resident at Michael Reese Orthopedic. Well, it turns out the guy had like blocked the knife with his hand, so his hand got stabbed, and he got stabbed in the side, and the guy walked into the hospital, and they said, okay, let's see what the guy hurt. The guy sliced his urethra. He sliced one of the kidney, whatever, the kidney tubes, some part of his liver. The guy walked in and died on the table. And so stabbings can be, you don't know, I mean, and the dude didn't even, you know, he thought it was like kind of nothing. He knew he was stabbed, but not nothing, but by the time they got in there was so much damage, the guy died. So you got to be careful on stabbings.
Well, they held him over the weekend. I guess they just were releasing him today. The other guy, the truck driver, is in bad shape.
Well, just happened to have his pepper spray and his knife. Oh, boy, what do you suppose a video of that would show? Ugh. Anyway, we got football just real quick because we'll finish it after the break. In the AFC East, the Bills lost last night to the Patriots. Did anybody think the Patriots are going to be any good? Now they got two big wins in a row. They're 3-2. Bills 4-1. Dolphins 1-4, and the Jets 0-5. So that division is kind of, we kind of know where that one's
going.
Well,
the question now is how long are they going to hang on to Fields?
Fields actually had a pretty good game, supposedly. Just not good enough. The AFC West, Chargers and Broncos are 3-2. Did you think the Broncos was good? Who did the Broncos beat somebody real good yesterday?
They beat the Philly. They beat the Eagles.
Yeah, in Philly.
In Philly.
Chiefs are 2-2. The Raiders 1-4. Boy, they really suck. Steelers 3-1. With I don't know how far are they going to go with what's his name? The guy's 100 years old, but so far so good. Bengals 2-3. Ravens 1-4. Lost 3 in a row. They got to be a lot of guys getting old all of a sudden. Jimmy Russell, they're all hurt. And the Browns 1-4, and then in the South, the Colts kicking ass. They're 4-1. Jaguars 3-1. Then the Texans 2-3, and the lowly Titans 1-4. We'll do the national when we get back. S&P futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 161. To the moon, Alice. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years I've seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
I'm a big fan of money. I like it. I use it. I have a little. I keep it in a jar on top of my refrigerator. I'd like to put more in that jar.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Matt Byrne on the board, Jim Lawler in studio. I assume we have some Flanagan here someplace. Man, I got the idea that both Jimmy and Flanagan have had to get a bigger jar. What do you think? Those
I think guys? We all need a bigger jar.
Well, yeah.
Agreed.
Only if it's full. Otherwise, you got to reach all the way down to get anything out of the bottom.
That's for sure.
Anyway, S&P futures up 21. NASDAQ futures up 165. Dow futures up 102. The big mover today is AMD is up $40 because OpenAI is going to take a stake in them. Now, I am sitting here looking at AMD revenue per share is about $8.5-$9 a share, which is pretty high. Right now, it's now going to be like 11 or 12, which is like really high. What the hell, Jimmy? Why don't they just make it $500 a share? What's the difference, right? Make it like Bitcoin. We don't care if they have any revenue or any stuff.
Why 500 when you can go to 1,000?
Well, yeah, just there is no top to this stuff. DAX up 44.2%, FTSE up 8, let's call that flat. CAC run down 105, 1.3. French stocks fall sharply after Prime Minister resigns after less than a month. We'll get Mr. Flanagan's view on that. I didn't even get a chance to know who the guy was, and he's already out. Before he was in, he was out. What the hell kind of deal is that, Jimmy? Nikkei up $2,100. 4.75%. Japanese stocks hit record highs as Sanye Takaichi's LDP victory drives yen past 150. Wow. Hang Seng down 183.7%. Shanghai up 20.52%. Bonds. Up 3 basis points, 4.15 in the 10-year. The Bund up 1, 2.71. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.69. God, these guys are just, they're pouring money in there, aren't they? Just pouring it in. And it's got that market going, so we got to be some very rich people over in Japan right about now. Oil up 71 cents, but still below 63. 61.59 as we flop back and forth, $2.50 one way or the other, 63. Brent up 78 cents, 65.30. RBOB up 2 cents, 188. So that's why gas prices are staying down. Gas price for me, I was down 40 cents this week after being up 40 cents the week before. I don't know what the volatility there is, but it was back down this week. Gold up $50, $39.58 on its way to 4,000. That is unreal. Silver up 21 cents, 48.17. Copper down 5 cents, but still over $5, 505. Foreign exchange, euro. See, the euro's down a little, so the dollar's up a little. It's 117. British pound 134, was over 135. But get a load of this. So this is a 2% move in the yen. As the yen is up 2.78. That's almost 2%. Now this is opposite now. Be careful. When you talk about the euro, when you say the euro is 117, that means 1 euro is worth $1.17. Now the yen is the other way. It's 150 yen to the dollar. So that being up means the yen is down. So got to be careful with that. Jimmy, how many people do you think understand that? Not too many unless you trade this stuff.
That is true.
Crypto up $1,500, 124, 295. Why do we worry about revenue or earnings per share when the fake stock is going to the moon? Matt, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports. Yeah, Kennedy, open, for God's sake, open.
It's doing good, yeah, over there. If you have a car, start driving to Kennedy. October 7th is the day, 2025, 6:35 is the time. Weather in Chicago right now, 68 degrees in the loop, high of around 78 degrees with a high with a sunny skies today. Tonight, mostly clear skies, though, and a low of 61. Meanwhile, down in Phoenix, Arizona, 69 degrees right now, temperature set to reach 91 today. In the NFL, Bears and Packers were off this week, although we saw Vikings beat the Browns 21-17. As, of course, the NFC North currently stands and wins losses. Detroit at top, 4-1. Packers next, 2-1. Vikings 3-2. And Bears at the very bottom, 2-2. Tonight, Chiefs play Jaguars at 7:15 p.m. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
We're going
to
do the National here in a second. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed. Let me get him on for you.
Good morning.
John, how are you?
Good. How about you?
All right. So are you doing the scheduling for the NFL? One might think. Wouldn't you think, Lawrence, one might think that if you have a bye week, instead of playing the Monday night when you come back, you might play the Thursday night instead of somebody having to come back from Sunday, but that would not be the NFL, would it?
No.
Why would there be any care whatsoever for these players? You know, what the hell? There's always going to be another guy taking a spot, right? So.
Right.
Anyway, Jan, we're real quick on the NFL side and the National Conference. We just did the American. We can't be prejudiced. Eagles, even after last night's shock, shall we say, losing in Philadelphia to what everybody thought was the lowly Patriots, but they must be better, Jimmy. I mean, they've looked pretty good this year. Last year they kind of sucked. The Commanders are right behind them, 3-2. Cowboys are now 2-2, so they're still in the hunt. Giants, 1-4. God, when are they going to be good again? They haven't been any good for, 30 years? 49ers, 4-1. Seahawks, 3-2. The Rams, 3-2. The Cardinals, 2-3, even though I think they won yesterday. The Lions, 4-1. They're definitely a chalk in the Bears division. The Packers, 2-1. Vikings, 3-2. The Bears, 2-2. And then we've got in the South, the Buccaneers, 4-1. Are they any good? How come nobody thought that quarterback could play? And he's played well for those guys. Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, he has.
Falcons 2-2, Panthers 2-3, and the very lowly Saints. Those are my two. Those are my two further bear wins, Jimmy. Are the Saints and the Giants? Who else do you think they can beat?
I don't know. I think they might have a chance against Green Bay. They're pretty banged up on their offensive line.
The Bears, you mean?
No.
Green Bay. Yeah.
Green Bay. They might be able to beat Minnesota.
But I got the two I think they're for sure going to win are the Saints and the Giants, because those guys are pretty hapless. But the Bear division, the Packers start out like they were gang beaters, right? And then all of a sudden they got some injuries. I haven't seen the Vikings play. Are they? What's their story?
They're up and down. I mean. It depends on who's their quarterback. They were playing T.J. McCarthy, and then he got down, so then they had to pay Carson Wentz.
Wow, there's a name from the past.
So I don't know who is going to show up. You know, I don't know what the injury is or...
Well, Mr. Flanagan, opine on this. I know you're a big gambler on this stuff. We have the Bears. We got the Commanders coming up. I say that's a loss. Feel free to argue here. I know you always do. Saints, they beat the Saints. Ravens, I would have thought they had no chance, but now the Ravens are 1-4. I don't know if they're all just getting along in a tooth at the same time or what that's all about. Bengals, I think they lose to the Bengals. Giants, they beat the Giants. Vikings, I think they lose. Steelers, I think they lose. Eagles, I think they lose. Packers, up there, they lose. The Browns, you think they beat the Browns? They might beat the Browns, huh?
Better to err on the side of caution.
So I might have them beating the Browns. I might be up to 5 wins instead of 4. Even though the Bears are better than last year, I mean, quite a bit.
I think so.
So what do you think of the market going up every day other than you get richer every day? Isn't it nice just put your feet up, rearrange your sack drawer, and be wealthier?
Well, but better to be here than in France.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, I was just reading about it last night and then this morning. Well, they've had 5 prime ministers in 21 months. That's a lot even by French standards.
Yeah, but don't they require a balanced budget, right? And none of these guys have been able to get a balanced budget, so then they quit.
Yeah, and, you know, they're facing the same pressures, but maybe in a somewhat different concentration than the UK, where they got a population that's, transformed by immigration, at least in the larger cities, and a globalist leaning leader, the president, and some pretty disaffected people, the old time, the Gaullists and more conservative, wings of the party are pretty outraged. So it's not an unusual scenario in Europe these days. And I think Macron is toast pretty much. I mean, he's going to have to step down or make some radical changes.
But what's the difference between the prime minister and the president over there?
Well, the president's elected, and prime ministers are not, but they are, they form a government kind of at the call of the executive. And
is the prime minister somewhat of a combination of the Speaker of the House and the head of the Senate? They're like the head of the legislature.
Yeah,
right?
we don't have a good equivalent of it in this country. And some say that's good, some say that's bad.
Well, if we had one House of Congress, that would be the Speaker or whatever that House is. It's like the Prime Minister in Britain is the head of the legislative branch, correct?
Right.
And he
participates, is in there wrestling with the rest of the legislators. But they are, it's all part of forming a government in times of consensus or lack of consensus. And this guy, the one who just stepped down, De Cornu, is, he's been there a month? Is it that long? I mean, I can't even remember. It doesn't seem like...
Oh, it's been a month. It's been almost exactly a month.
Yeah, and he was, I don't know who you would equate him to here, but he's definitely, the old guard conservative, like Gingrich or something in this country. He's young. I don't think he's 40 years old. But I don't know. Some of these, figures, they may have a political future when the winds tip, and they will in France. I mean, I think there's a real rising right there that they really don't want to address. And it's the same in the UK. It's the same in Germany. I mean, you can take your pick of all these European nations that are in ferment. And the globalists, I think, are running scared. So that there may be a future for De Cornu somewhere down the road. He could run for president. He could be part of another government. But I think something is going to change. It's going to change in the next 6 months or a year. I see France economically in worse shape than we are, and more volatile right now, I think. So it's something to watch. Because they're a big economy. They're a force militarily too. So somebody to keep an eye on.
Well, I don't. I'm just kind of curious. I don't see how these guys, in the history of this guy, you didn't have to listen to us, but I mean, if you've been listening to the show for the last 8 years, and God, John, we just ragged and ragged and ragged about these places. What are you doing, piling out all this debt during this COVID situation? All the other stuff, whether people should have been able to go back to work, it ended up being this massive bleep show in terms of debt. I don't see how the hell when you're buying stuff at negative interest rates. What that means for those that, as bizarre as it may seem, okay, here's how a regular government or any other bond works. Okay, every bond has a bond, meaning that they actually send you a check, unlike a bill where you just buy it at a discount and then you get the full price on the day that it matures. a band, they actually send you a check, and a band has a coupon rate, where a bill does not. When we go to the auction for our clients, the bill's going to pay $100 or $1,000 in 90 days. So we pay for you, you know, $975 or some whatever it is. And then you do the calculation, that comes out to 4% interest, because you're going to get whatever, X number over 90 days, multiply it times 4, and that's going to be your interest rate, correct? So you buy that as a discount. Now, bonds, there's a coupon rate to it. If you buy a 30-year U.S. bond, it's going to say 5% on it, or 4% or some number. But it never trades at 1,000. I mean, when I say never, I guess, you know, you flip a coin, it could end up on the side, right, John? Even the day you buy it, you're going to pay 1,080 cents, or 999920 or something. Because there's always going to be a rate that's, the market rate's going to be slightly different than the coupon rate. So, okay, how do you get from, if you get a bond that's supposedly paying 5%, how do you get a negative interest rate? That means somebody buys, well, that's step one. Let's say the rate drops to 4% and the coupon is 5. What happens to the bond price? Well, the bond price is going to go to like 104, 105. Because at that price that you pay for it, when the rate, the checks come to you that are supposed to be 5%, they're not 5 anymore, they're 4, because you paid more than the $1,000, correct?
Right.
I mean, I don't know how many people can necessarily work through this. I think if you thought about it, you could. Well, now, if you get negative interest rates, that means some mofo goes out and pays like 160 or something, to where if you add up all the interest for the next 10 or 30 years, you're still paying more for the bond to where you're not getting anything. Okay, now you might say, who the hell would do that? Like, only a government. Now, we did almost that bad here by going to what? 0.5% or 1%. But I don't think we ever went negative. If we might have come close, we never did. Now, those guys were actually negative for a long time. So I'm going to get, here's my $1,000 bond. I'm going to get $500 in interest. Guess what? I'm selling it to some guy for $1,600. You and I are going, now there's a deal. Right? I mean, what manner of moron would do that? But governments do. So I don't see how those guys, or us, for instance, we're not even attempting to balance ours. I mean, that's our shtick here. I mean, we're not even close. The stuff that Trump and the Congress is fighting over, it's a question of being, you know, 30% in the hole or 31% in the hole, right? It has nothing to do with being even. So I don't see how you could, if our interest rate, what are we paying in interest per year? Like, the debt's $37 trillion. So let's put a 3% number on that. It's got to be what? $900 billion? Something like that? I mean, how the hell are we ever going to balance any kind of a plus and minus on expenses and taxes when you've got that thing, being pulled out the side? I mean, how does France going to balance a budget with their interest costs? I mean, who can do that?
I don't see it. You know, it's, well, what kind of solutions do they really have? I mean, my solution, I don't think they can solve this, but what alternatives do they have now? And I think there's a lot of people watching this because it's taking, you know, creativity that I don't think that country has, you know, to figure out any kind of good alternative right now. It's going to mean tremendous change to try to get back to some kind of a, you know, fiscal stability. But, you know, they got other instability that I think is probably even more threatening right now. You know, they've got some of the same things you see in Brazil and even here, you know, to some extent, where they're, you know, barring the political opposition from running for president. So they got Le Pen, you know, ostracized and supposedly excluded from the next presidential election. I don't know how that's going to go down. That's been tried in Brazil with Bolsonaro. It was tried here with Trump, too. So it shows there's some kind of desperation on the political front that shows an even more acute problem. And I think this shows, you know, the huge divisions in the factions that are hardening in France.
When you don't have dough, though, Jan, there's always going to be divisions because everybody wants theirs.
Yeah, and this is where the UK is now, and I you know, as I said, take your pick of countries where this is the case, and it's the intransigence, you know, of previous governments or administrations, and just the ridiculous overspending, and you know, hitching onto the globalist star, you know, throwing money at climate, you know, alternatives, and you know, downsizing your energy consumption in the name of climate change, you know, or global warming, whatever the name du jour is, and all these countries are paying a huge price in, you know, their ability to build coalitions anymore. And you know, when you can't,
you always go down that road. Rich people do pretty well with governments.
Well, they, you know, and they can go from country to country and be happy. They don't have the allegiance that maybe you or I or a lot of people think they do. And that's one of the secrets of the globalist success, is that they are completely apolitical and nationalistic, and that they don't make any.
Well, we didn't have to let our you know, a huge percentage of our biggest corporations figure out a way to be overseas and not pay any taxes for 20 years. I mean, there's more money there than they ever pissed away on, you know, feeding immigrants. You're not even on the same planet. It's just a question of which one you want to look at. I mean, it's but I think, John, the solution really, if there is one, the solution really is what our government, the U.S. of A., has essentially, has been their mantra, their hidden mantra for the last 20 years. It's, okay, we've got all this debt, World War II on, right, wherever it's from. Guess what, guys? We're not paying it back. It's just, there's no way in God's earth that we're gonna, that you know, 5 years from now, we're not going to owe anybody a dime. That ain't happening. Okay, so how do we manage the debt? Well, the story has been, and this is for those that are amazingly one-sided or another in a political argument, this has been an argument that both sides have latched onto really since I can remember. I mean, ever since Clinton ran the alleged surplus for a while, we really had nothing but problems with every president since. Everybody since has doubled the deficit. Well, Trump didn't, because he was only 4 years, but he was well on his way. And he's well on his way this time. So he's right with the pack, as much as he says otherwise. They've all done the same thing. The mantra has been, it doesn't matter if we shove out 30 years, and somehow or another, we can get a real growth in the economy. This is both sides. I'm not talking, this is not, you know, me talking Democrat or other BS here. Both sides. As long as we can get the economy to grow, I'll pick a number, 3%, and our debt grows 2.95, we're gaining on it. And just extend it out 35 years, we're good to go. That has been everybody on the Council of Economic Advisors. It doesn't matter if it was Larry Kudlow or Larry Liberal. It doesn't matter. They've all essentially drunk from the same batch of Kool-Aid. And we don't care what the money supply is, as long as we can get this growth versus debt growth under control, and one is a slightly ahead of the other one, we're good to go. I have to believe you agree with me that that's been the overall mantra.
Yeah.
Now, the problem comes is when people come up with these very, I won't say stupid bills, because some of them might have had, you know, some thought behind them. I'll just look at the ones that are recent. Okay, infrastructure bill. That would be Biden's, or in his office. He comes out and he says, well, we're going to spend, pick a number, $1 trillion. But it's not going to be. It's not going to cost us $1 trillion, because this is going to be so accretive to everything. We're going to have, you know, what is it, the five budges on your phone in the worst neighborhoods, and everybody's going to get Wi-Fi, and everybody's going to become so productive that everybody's going to pay all these taxes. At the end of the day, it's not going to be $1 trillion out. It's going to be $1 trillion out and $1 trillion in, or something crazy like that. But then you go to the Republican side. Dutch Reagan, Trump twice. We're lowering taxes essentially to our people. And there's other people got caught in there too, so it's not just. We're lowering taxes to our people, but guess what? This is such a tremendous thing for them they're now going to use this money, and they're going to go out and invest, and they're going to invest in stuff where there's going to be more growth there. And by the way, we're lowering our taxes by $1 trillion, but at the end of the day, over the next 10 years, $1.1 trillion is going to come creeping back in here in terms of tax payments. Well, that is total utter bullshit too, just like the Biden thing. So now this idea of how do we even value what we're doing underneath this overall mantra, we've got to grow a little faster than our debt. We've blown it out of the water in the last three administrations, for God's sake. I mean, we're not even close now, are we?
No. And the thing about the Reagan tax cuts and everything else, there was absolutely no interest then for either party to reduce spending, and that's why they had to jack up the taxes
a year later.
And it's pretty much the same now. There seems to be there's discussion about cutting, and Doge was a part of that, and there's all sorts of possible solutions during the shutdown to cut spending, but I don't know if there's any appetite for permanent cuts in the way that this is going to make.
Well, whatever we, I don't want to get in this discussion, but whatever we saved on Doge, we're spending on the private army,
right?
But
until there's got to be some kind of structural readjustment of how the cities are run and how states are run and how public aid is administered and education and so on. But if you just look at Chicago or any big city as an example, until they fix problems like that in those places, I don't see that there's any way to think about it in a national framework. So this is always going to be a drag on.
Well, the national part's the same way. I mean, everything is nothing. Matter of fact, what I wanted to get in with you and Jimmy, who's here. I had a very pleasant experience this weekend, and I made it out to Odds in time to watch some of the game, but I did not because our friend who wants to come back on next Monday, maybe, Jen, Diane Kelly, happened to be there. And even though she had to go meet her husband for dinner, I managed to commandeer her for an hour. And we went through all the stuff going on in the veterans areas and all the changes and all the stuff that's happening to people. And I'm not, on the one hand, I'm real happy I went through this conversation. On the other, I'm sitting there going, oh, my God. When you say this has all happened on the city level, do you think for a second that our idiots in Washington that have, let's say, participated in these wars over the last several years, now whether you should have or you should not, and I'm not a military genius at all. That's we'll leave that for Mr. Murphy and Lou. But the assessment of how much this stuff is going to cost has always been, I'm going to say, it's worse, Jen, on a scale of 5 or 6 than the crap you see happening in the inner city schools. It's worse. I actually read something when we did, was it Gulf, not Gulf 1, Gulf 2. When Bush the second invaded Iraq, and somebody, again, a piece of paper that I managed to have lost, they were estimating, whatever it was going to cost to X, Bush the dumber. And I've even read the stuff. But this guy said, by any stretch, this thing is going to cost us $1.5 trillion minimum more than these guys say it's going to cost us. And in terms of taking care of people, the injuries over the next 40 years, because it's going to sound harsh, but in our world of warfare, not a whole lot of people die. Somebody dies, they're cheap, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of money. I mean, you don't want people dead, for God's sake, I know that. But they're cheap in terms of money. If you got to take care of them for the next 40 years, that's a problem in terms of cash. So we patch people together. If you had people with two legs blown off in World War I, I don't think that guy survives. Do you?
No.
But now you do, guy or lady. Tammy Duckworth, for instance. So the estimates, and yet you would think that Bush's buddies, they wanted two things. They wanted lower taxes, and they wanted somehow or another to go back and do something in Iraq. And I don't know why, what the driving force was that, or it was Cheney, it was Rumsfeld, whoever the hell it was. But somebody decides to do this. And Colin Powell, who I think, you know, was probably one of the heroes of our generation, made basically a total ass out of himself on the national stage by talking about weapons of mass destruction that they never found. Right? Anyway, so we go in and we do this. Now, why? You would think, Jen, you and I, even though we disagree on a lot of stuff, I think we would have agreed that, okay, if we're going to do this, you know what? We need a 20% surcharge on everybody's income tax for the next 2 years. I'm going to say that would have gone over like the biggest fart in church anybody ever let loose of. That would never have happened. Yet why wouldn't you tie those two things together when that's exactly what you're doing? You knew you couldn't pay for it. I mean, with the current way things were going, you're going to print the money. You're going to print the money, and now we're saddled with it. That's what happened, right?
And you remember, as I do, Tom, all during the run up to the wars, there was absolutely no discussion in the press about any of this. It was never, you know, not a single columnist that I can recall ever posed. You know,
well, there was one because I got one, so I don't know where it came from. But there was a few around, but nobody listened to them.
Yeah, that was the first example to me. You know, that was a chilling, you know, indicator of just how corrupt the media was, because you couldn't find, you know, a counter argument in any major newspaper at the time, and I thought, and from people who really didn't know anything about what they were talking about, least of all the human cost, but the financial cost too. That this was never presented in a way that, you know, was remotely honest, and it's you know, probably the worst example I can think of from what I know of history, of where the media sold a country on the idea of a war, and, you know, no regard for the cost.
What about Vietnam? It caused us to go off the gold standard and start the inflation that we all remember from the 70s and 80s.
Right, but there was pushback during the Vietnam era, you know, after, you know, pretty early on.
But it was pushback on principle, and I didn't want to. It was not monetary.
No, and it wasn't, and even politically, it was not consistent. And I mean, Nixon, you know, pretty much got elected, you know, promising to you know, shorten the war or end it, and you know, took the opposite approach, you know, within, you know, months of being, you know, inaugurated. So there wasn't a real consistent messaging at all.
But I think you're correct, but I don't remember all the time we were in school and everybody was not wanting to go and people were dodging the draft. Read a president we have now. And a lot of people didn't want to go, so he wasn't the only one, but still, I mean, whatever. I never once saw an article that said we should get out of Vietnam because it's costing too much. It was always about the people getting killed and body counts, and that was way more important than, by the way, we're going to debt because of it.
No, and the thing about the, you know, the subsequent wars that makes it more tragic, that, you know, it was a volunteer army, there was no draft, and the draft was really, as you know, for my generation, our generation, that was the flashpoint that fueled the anti-war movement. It wasn't the economy, and even when people like Martin Luther King started changing their tune, and he was taking on, you know, the involvement in Vietnam in, you know, the last 6 months of his life, I'm convinced that's what got him killed.
Could very well.
That was not on the screen.
But there was a slight difference, Jan. Not in the numbers, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you say. But there was a slight difference in the sense that when we went over there, how many people in the country even knew we were there when the thing all started? Did it start under Eisenhower?
Well, with the advisors and, you know...
But that was even before Kennedy,
right? From before when the French were in there.
Yeah.
The U.S. had people there.
But I'm saying it was, in terms of my world, the numbers world, it was a little different. We had people over there, advisors. And then when we were screwing, then we put this in. Then we wanted to protect the advisors. But it was kind of a bracket creep in a sense that it was always seemingly out of whatever the current military budget was, then all of a sudden it wasn't. Then all of a sudden, now we're talking about B-52s and putting battleships back. And all of a sudden, it just mushroomed from one to the next to the other. With always some, oh no, those guys did that to us here, so now we got to use this weapon, we got to use that weapon. In terms of a guy like me trying to budget the thing and come up with a succinct paper or article or budget. Wait a minute. It's not really the same as Iraq too, when there was no war, and we were essentially saying, okay, we're building up to this. Guys like me, smarter than me, could have sit there and go, you could have actually put a serious budget together for that war, because it didn't just get there by accretion. Is I guess what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could have said, okay, we're going to have, 50 naval vessels involved. Well, that's, 100 million a day or 50, whatever the number was back then. We're gonna take these particular divisions out of their places in the U.S. We're going to ship them over there, all these tanks. You, not me, but guys like Mike Murphy, his staff, they probably could have come up with a pretty reasonable number. This is what it's going to cost if we're over here for 120 days. I think they'd have been spot on. You couldn't have really done that in Vietnam, because most people didn't even know we were there before it was a problem, right?
Right. And when it did become a problem, I mean, this was, at the same time, President Johnson was putting, bringing troops to the Dominican Republic in 65. So this was, there was kind of this, sense, that's just, a typical American incursion in the Caribbean. Vietnam was so far away, and it's so off the radar. The only real link, and it's one that people maybe should have paid more attention to in retrospect, was to what had happened in Korea. And
another accretive sort of thing.
Yeah, still, bleeding wound today, really. But, but that was the template that I think was the resemblances are pretty sharp. And you had the same involvement of China and Russia to some extent, and the neighboring states and in the Pacific Rim, and our alliance with Japan, all these things were on the table, and it was a flashpoint that was much worse than Korea, in that Korea ended up in a stalemate, and it's still existing today.
It's still a war. It's still a ceasefire. It's not a truce. What is it? It's a truce, right?
Yeah, and a demilitarized zone, this probably one of the most patrolled areas in the world right now, outside the Middle East anyway.
Where they play loud music back and forth the other side doesn't like.
Yeah, but compare that to the outcome in Vietnam. I mean, we had the advantage of fighting to a stalemate, and we didn't sacrifice, South Korea to the North, to the Chinese, and then... look at it's happy talk with Vietnam. They're a trading partner of ours. All of this was for naught if you put it in stark terms. I hate to say it, the people fighting there died for nothing, but I wish I could come up with some kind of justification.
With a better reason, yeah. Well, to get back to what started all this was, I was talking to Diane, and they opened a place when she was on the air last time. A few people from the show, in fact, Mr. Lawler's foundation gave them some money. Mr. Jim Lawler, sitting right across from me, and they were very happy to get that. They opened that place, the one up at Great Lakes, and now that's an unusual spot, John, because it is a combined veterans home and spot for active duty people. So if you're up at Great Lakes, and it's still the basic training for the whole Navy, right? So if you do something and you land wrong and you break an ankle, guess what? You're in that hospital. And maybe your family comes up to see you while you're in the hospital. So you get people staying at the Fisher House up there that aren't necessarily there to see veterans, type of thing. And she says they're trying to figure out, the Veterans Administration, I don't know, it would help or hurt from the current administration, hopefully help. She goes, the World War II guys are basically wound down. I mean, the latest Tuskegee Airman guy we talked about last week, he died last week, and he's 100, right? And he enlisted in 43 and a half, and he was 19, all right? So let's say, there might be a couple of guys left from World War II that are 98, 99, but not a hell of a lot. Virtually everybody's hit the century mark. So they're really kind of winding down on Korea. A lot of those guys are toast too. So you're left with Vietnam people who have, just horrific injuries or Agent Orange, all huge incidents of cancer, all those kinds of things. And that's still a big problem. You have, you move up to Afghanistan, and you have still people from Gulf One. A lot of stuff happened there. And not as much as Afghanistan, obviously. And you got recent people, Gulf Two, and you've got, a lot of some of the current stuff. But and they're wondering if they have, too many veterans homes. These guys die off, and I don't want to say it, but I go, Diane, don't worry, we'll fill them up. How scary is that, Jana? We'll fill them up. But she claims that now one of the biggest things now is psychology stuff.
Yep.
And they're having some real issues with. we've been talking about these vaccines, and I don't know enough to argue about one or the other. But she goes, the incidence of cancer now is getting dramatic, even in the younger people. And the mental side of it is seemingly way worse. Maybe they just ignored it after World War II. But now, the mental side, even from people that are in training or in active service, is becoming an issue that they're dealing with. That some of the veterans facilities are set up for that. And I can't wait to have her on Monday, because I won't try and tell her story, because she does a much better job of it. But it's kind of changed, and it's not really letting up, John. It's just moving around a little bit.
Yep. And again, this is never factored into anything when it comes to even veterans expenditures, which can't really track this because it's a moving target. We barely know, the extent of the injuries that people suffer in warfare now, because a lot of it is not visible. It's something war always affected people this way and destroyed lives and suicides and depression, all this stuff. It's an old story in warfare of people who just can't make the adjustment back to civilian life if they're lucky enough to survive, or even if they have a minor injury. It isn't like it's you fit right back in again. But we have no clue now. With the development of armaments and the expense that's been allocated to that, we don't understand the physical or mental toll of any of this stuff. And we pay more attention to our war machinery than we do to the people operating it.
Well, I'll give you one quick story, and I'm sitting there going, good Lord. Diana, in addition to doing stuff with the Fisher House, she has been a volunteer. She's a very devout Catholic. She's been a volunteer at the one in Maywood for forever. Is that Heinz?
Heinz, yeah.
When I say volunteer, she cooks for some of these guys in Easter morning because there's no special dinner at the place. She's there every Sunday at 5 o'clock for 5 o'clock Mass. And for the guys who can't make it into the chapel, she runs around and gives them all communion. This is at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday when everybody else is in bed or doing whatever they're doing. So she said she landed on this guy last Sunday, and the dude is, I forget what war she said, he might have been in Afghanistan, but he wasn't, it wasn't like he was 75 or anything. And the dude's sitting there, and he's pretty much all messed up. He has family's had a history of diabetes, so he's got that, but he also got messed up totally by something over there. And whatever agents he was involved with have made the diabetes. So he's telling her, I probably got 6 months to live, but they think both legs got to go next week because of the diabetes. And she goes, the guy has no family. People there do the best they can. They don't have enough people to go and they actually talk to people and do anything like that. And she goes, and the guy says, well, are you coming by next week? I'll be waiting for it all week. She goes, for my 2-minute conversation with the guy. Unless you're there and you see this stuff, you have no idea of the toll we've taken on these people. And nobody seems to care. And the families kind of, if you're away for 5 years, the families kind of lose you too. They all move. You come back, the brother's in the home in Maywood. Well, I'll send him a card at Christmas or something. I mean, It is scary, the human toll this takes. And it seems like, I think a lot of people care, but you really can't work it into your day. But just to pick one or two, three stories out at a time. I mean, this guy who just died, the 100-year guy, the Tuskegee Air dude, said his last 20 years, he did everything he possibly could to get any benefits available to the families of the people that were he flew with. Because people didn't know what benefits maybe were in the family. Some families, I'm sure, were fine, and some weren't. I mean, if we didn't have, you know, everybody's always bitching about how much money the government spends on this stuff. There's regular people that dedicate their whole lives. I mean, what would Chicago look like if we didn't have a food depository, for God's sake? How many people do they feed a day? 200,000?
Or Catholic Charities.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, but people merrily go along essentially writing these checks that other people have to pay, and it just, at my age, it's starting to bother me even more, John, but what am I going to do about it, you know?
Well, we're really good at hiding the things we don't want to think about or have no solutions for and don't want to be reminded of, clearly.
Well, you know, last week when I dug up the stuff about, you know, not what our group is doing in terms of what it reminds me of, I'm not going to go there, but I dug up the part about, I actually just kind of Googled, you know, what instances were there when people show up, you mentioned earlier, in Europe, certain European countries, people show up to do a lot of work that other people don't want to do, and then they don't want them there anymore. So the first thing that pops up is the Chinese and the U.S. railroads. I didn't have to go to Germany or Mussolini or anybody for there. It's right here. We actually passed a law to boot these guys. How scary is that? All these guys did come. What do you suppose the death rate was on guys digging those tunnels? Was it 10%, 20% a year? It had to be more than that. Nobody even cared, did they?
No, and the same with, you know, building the I&M Canal or the Brooklyn Bridge, or you name the public works project where there were people dying pretty regularly. And, you know, they're...
Well, the I&M, a lot of guys, they drank themselves to death because of...
And everything. I mean, all sorts of things. You know, today, if you were to undertake a project like that, you wouldn't have the mortality for a lot of reasons. But, it's because we have machinery to replace what people had to do, you know, 150, 160 years ago. And that's a great luxury, you know. And yet we're not building things, anything like the I&M Canal anymore, at least lately.
Well, I mean, the difference was that the... For those that don't know, the I&M Canal is essentially what put Chicago on the map. When Father Marquette, and was it the French guy's name?
Louis Joliet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When they came through, they said, okay, what we need, this is a long, long time ago, somehow we got to connect the Great Lakes with the Mississippi. I mean, there's a way to do this. And if you do that, all of a sudden, you know, the entire central part of the country will be connected with Eastern in terms of shipping. And you ended up having the Clinton's Folly with the Erie Canal. Went from the Hudson to Lake Erie, around Lake Ontario, whatever one it goes to. It's in Buffalo, so it's Lake Erie.
It goes straight across the state.
It goes right across the state. So there was a debate between should we use the portage here, which is, this is called the Chicago Portage, because this, I'll take 2 minutes on this, Jen. Kick me if I take too much longer. It's a very
I love talking about it though.
But it's a very odd geography here. There's the Lake Michigan drainage, which essentially is the Chicago River, but then if you go anywhere further west, there's a divide of sorts around Summit, which you pretty much could step over. You wouldn't even know where you were if somebody had told you. On the other side of this little divide, it's a Mississippi River drainage, which is the Des Plaines River, right? If you can get from the Chicago River to the Des Plaines River, which Father Marquette thought was a canal of, you know, 2 miles, which it turned out to be like 80 miles, it was easy. And here's the best thing about guys like Jim Lord, always want to be captain, right? If you showed up with a barge, or a big canoe, and you wanted to get from the Chicago River, at some times of the year there was this massive marsh in the middle that you could actually get from one spot to the other, but not easily. Well, the captain would go to the bar, All the other guys hopped down like into the swamp and pushed the boat by hand from the Chicago River to finally where it made it to the Des Plaines. It was a real reason why you wanted to be a captain in those days.
Oh, yeah, or put the canoe on your head.
Yeah, or put the canoe on. So the amount of bug bites and typhoid and all the other crap that was going on for all that stuff was pretty dramatic. So when the I&M Canal came, right, we're going to connect, essentially, the Chicago River with the Des Plaines / Illinois River. All right, so problem was it's not just poking through because the canal had to be, what, 8 feet deep, something like that. It wasn't 20 like the one is now, but say it was 8 feet deep. Well, you got to go way down the Illinois River to find a spot in the Illinois River that's 8 feet deep. I mean, you see the Kankakee River running by, it's like, what, 2 feet deep? 1.5 maybe? So you got to go ways down with locks and all the other stuff. So you sit there and go, how hard could it be to dig a ditch essentially 60 feet wide? Well, it's pretty hard when you're going through a swamp. You ever tried to dig a ditch through a swamp by hand? I'm going to say that was a tough day. So, you know, it was a big deal. And there's the reason why the Chicago Board of Trade opened essentially the same year as the I&M Canal opened is, duh, Chicago became a delivery point for grain and grain futures. You could bring your grain to Chicago, and it could be picked up in Chicago by ships on the Great Lakes, and those ships could now go east to New York and the rest of the country, correct? And that's what set the whole place. Up until then, St. Louis was a way bigger city than Chicago, right?
Oh, yeah. Trade-wise, certainly.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And population-wise, too. Definitely trade.
Oh, population, too, I think.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of... But now, what was the toll on that? How many Irish people, mostly all Irish, you know, died digging that thing? Well, you had no other job, really. I mean, how many people died young because they worked at the stockyards with all the chemicals and fumes and all the other stuff in the tanning factories and actually the tanning factories on the north side, but the rendering plants. How would you like to live? I when I was real young, Dan, where were you? We were at 50th and Morgan, and the yards went to 47th Street, so we were three blocks away. Normally, you would get this, you know, west wind, and it wouldn't really nail us too bad. But I remember as a kid, boy, wind came the wrong way. And it lasted, it still stunk 2 or 3 years after the damn place closed.
Oh, yeah. Well, and even, you know, going to events at the amphitheater, which was in the stockyards.
Yeah.
You know, just coming out, you walking to your car, the whiff you got in the 60s, you know.
But this was after the stockyards closed. I mean, after it closed, it didn't stink as bad, but it wasn't like they removed every turd in one day. Duh.
On my mother's side, her grandfather was an immigrant. He came to Chicago in 1869 or 1870 and worked in the stockyards.
Didn't everybody?
And lived in the stockyards. I mean, I found from old directories and stuff his hotel, such as it was probably just like an SRO for, you know, single guys working in the stockyards. It was, you know, 41st and Halston, right next to the stockyards. So, I mean, you lived and breathed. It wasn't like he ever got away from it. I don't know. He became a cop later. I think that was a breath of fresh air in more than one sense.
Well, if you look at a railroad map, an old railroad map of Chicago, and even now if you take the Rock Island south, and you get to be like right where about where Sox Park is, little south maybe, you'll see these three railroad bridges going across the top of, well, the old Rock Island Road down to Metro.
Yeah, Bridge Street, yeah.
Yeah, and you'll say, what are those for? And because there's another huge railroad right away, just the other side of the Dan Ryan, bigger than the Rock Island. And if you look any other parts of the city, there's always this turn at 43rd Street. And you go, what's that all? And so every single railroad in the city could get to the stockyards. So the thing you're seeing over the Rock Island tracks is the Illinois Central's connection to the stockyards. Everybody had a connection there, whether you were hauling finished meat away or hauling cows in or whatever it was. There isn't a railroad around that didn't find a way in there.
I think the shortest independent railroad in Chicago was the Chicago Junction Railroad. And I know about this because it ran next to my dad's house where he grew up. It came off the Illinois Central tracks along the lake and ran over 41st Street across Cottage Grove and it had an L line, you know, too. That's kind of what L that ran alongside it, that, you know, just like the stockyard itself, it's a continuation of that. But the Chicago Junction Railroad was to get trains to and from the Illinois Central tracks and the stockyards. And that was the only, you know, one from the lake to Halston Street, pretty much.
But every huge firm was there. Swift, the
beginning. Oh, yeah. Arms.
Yeah. Oh, they were all.
And they were all the stops on the Stockyard L system. You know, there was the Packers' names. You know, Swift, Armor. It was your L stop, and that's where you got off. That's where the slaughterhouse was. And the offices and everything else, too.
So, Jan, when do you think, when's the day that we kick the full thing forward and say, okay, we're going to give another, we're going to do the 14th a temporary spending bill and kick it off to December. When we got another 2-3 days of this before that, or what?
Yeah, and it may be more. You know, I think that it's all about the public relations and the image now. That, you know, and that's really something you think about before you do something like this. But at some point, you have to like think about that more than anything else. People lose interest, you know, unless you give them some reason to care about it. And, you know, if you can make political hay out of it, which both sides, you know, are trying to do, and that's the reason I think there's a shutdown at all. It's because of what has to be done politically.
Well, the shutdown has, on both sides, everybody always bitches at the party that talks about the shutdown. And when the Republicans are in the White House, it's the Democrats. And Democrats are in the White House, it's the Republicans. I think it and everybody says, what, it's another look at the apple, why, or another chunk out of the apple. Why are you doing that? You voted for these bills, and now you're not voting for the... I think the real reason, Jan, is on both sides, whatever bills they think they signed, whatever bullshit the president at the time gave people, and however the Office of the Management and Budget, or the Budget Office, caved into the powers to be, whoever the powers to be were at the time, they see the amount of debt going up, and they look at the bills they signed, and you know what? They don't match. And there is some logic to, wait a minute. All this stuff I signed in the last 10 years I've been in the Senate or voted for, we should be at $32 trillion, and we're at $37. Where's the other five? And nobody's ever very forthcoming, because it always seems to want to grow faster than anybody predicted that it would. Now, you know, Lou and Carl have reasons for that, where Carl says you have to, by law, you have to say that a law that's supposed to end next year is going to end next year, and you figure that in your estimates. Well, guess what? It never ends. So then all of a sudden it gets pushed on, and all of a sudden that's never in anybody's calculations, and that's why I think people on both sides of the aisle look at the $37 trillion and go, we're not supposed to be there. And if you look at all the stuff we passed in the last 10 or 12 years, we're supposed to be at 28 or 26, not 37. So there is somewhat of a legitimate reason for the second chunk of the apple, but then, like you say, it degenerates into all this political haggling back and forth. And I'm so disgusted with both sides, in the sense that, and this isn't, you know, that in terms of this medical stuff, you listen to the show or you check anything out, and you look at the CPI, a big chunk of our problem is in the medical system, money-wise. Now, I'm not even talking about care and all the other stuff that we could go into for like a month, right, Jen? I'm talking about just in terms of money. And our biggest lie we give to people in the CPI is it's 6% of the basket when it's 21. Okay, so when it goes up, we don't even count it, for God's sake. And yet, it's there. And now, on one side, we've got a group that doesn't have anywhere near the stones to go after the drugs or hospital side. Maybe we're all getting paid or whatever. I'm talking to Democrats. They refuse to take them on and blindly keep wanting to somehow finance it. And the other side, it's going to sound a little harsh, they don't have the stones to go after these people anyway, and their back pockets are full of checks from the hospitals and the drug companies. And they seem to say, well, let's just cut off funding to the states, and, well, we don't want to say let everybody die. Guess what? Let everybody die. So neither side, to me, is even remotely in the solution bag here. I don't, and they refuse to sit down even on the QT and say, okay, guys, both of us are feeding the world a line of bullshit. we better figure this out. I mean, you would think there would be a few people that would realize that the problem isn't either in the funding or in the whatever, it's in the price. And yet, I don't see any whiff of that, do you, Jen?
No. And the whole discussion, remember, 40, 50 years ago about managed care, when HMOs were introduced, the idea that you could, if not, you know, ration health care, you could at least, you know, try to build efficiency models into it so that you weren't, you know, spending money, you know, mindlessly or to no effect. But what it's now turned into is it's about managing care given the prices that cannot be altered or tampered.
Yeah, you know what, part of the HMO, Jan, and we'll talk about this maybe when we have Diane next week. Part of the HMO was we want preventative care. Now we don't care. We don't care at all about preventative care. Does anybody even know what that even means now?
No.
We don't care. If you show up and you die the next day, boy, that's cheaper, right? Duh. Anyway, SP Futures up 24, NASDAQ Futures up 213. Do we have Nancy? Want to go right to her? We're in the same spot we are here. There isn't any announcement.
We have Nancy right now.
We don't. Well, let's go to break then. We'll go to break. We'll come right back. Hopefully we'll have Nancy. Yeah.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
You can't learn how to close. You better start thinking about another career. And I am deadly serious.
All right, Matt, who is that? And what was the theme song for what?
Oh, man, I know it's Del Shannon.
Theme song for Crime Story.
Yeah, Chicago-based.
Yeah, what a great... I actually have, if you guys want to, we could have a little party. I have the entire, I've never watched them. I got a reason why... Here's the reason why. But we have Nance?
We do, yeah.
Nance, how are you? We would invite you, Nance, too. You could be like the one lady there. I don't know if that's what you want to be, but...
It would probably help if I unmuted her.
Nance, would you want to be the one lady there watching Crime Story episodes?
Sure.
we all know how it ended, you know, but...
I don't.
Okay, well, then I won't say how it ended. But essentially it was the Tony Spilatro story. Jan, who's Tony Spilatro? We have Mr. Flynn.
Remember my mob history here.
Well, he was found in Indiana with his brother. Yes. Near the end.
Yeah, in a cornfield. Dead, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. But I don't think, when he was buried, I don't think he was dead. But he was the guy that, he was from the Chicago mob, and he brought the gambling, the bookmaking, out into Las Vegas to where all the bookies around the country could lay off their ads in Las Vegas at the Stardust and those places. He's the one who did that. He was the genius, basically, that did that. And this movie was all about a guy, or the TV show was about a Chicago mob guy that did all this kind of crap here and then eventually moved to Vegas. And the guy, Dennis Farina, was the Chicago policeman that was on this guy like white on rice. And then eventually, when they moved to Vegas, his whole group moved to Vegas. But the reason why I have I made sure I bought the entire episodes of, like, man, was it Jimmy 3 years, 4 years? I don't know.
Yeah,
what time, but
it was about 4 years.
And but all the spots in Chicago, Nance, all the corners and what they used to look like, it is a period piece of Chicago.
Oh, really?
An absolute
What's
period.
This called? What is this
crime
called?
Crime story. You know when you the Randolph Street Market over there, and the they used to be all, you know, used to be all food and stuff distributors. And then you actually can sneak through there. Is it on Morgan, Jen, where you can actually make it underneath the tracks and get to the north side? You know, but you go over, yeah, like how many tracks over there? There used to be like a pay phone right on that street by the tracks. Well, who's the guy that ended up on not Hill Street Blues, NYPD Blue? What's the red guy here? Guy Johnny. He ended up on Crime Story Miami and stuff. He was pain in the ass to work with. Johnny,
David Caruso. David Caruso was on NYPD Blue.
I'm talking about David Caruso, man. Sorry, it was
David Caruso. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, his first thing, God, was he a young little redheaded guy? He was in a Crime Story, and he ended up with Ray Luca, who was the mob guy. He started moving up the chain, but he was way too aggressive. They couldn't control him. So right where all those tracks went across there, with the phone. He's with Ray Luca, and he's in one of those, like, remember those 62 Thunderbirds that looked just like one of my favorite cars, where the front looked like an airplane wing?
Yeah.
Well, he's driving one of those, and Ray Luca pulled out a gun, and he nails him right there where those tracks were. And then he gets out of the car, goes to the payphone, dials up one of his buddies and says, come pick me up. I remember that payphone being there. But all the gas stations that were gone and all the other stuff and everything. Anyway, Nance, enough with that. We had a very nice visit I did with Diane Kelly yesterday, and she's coming on next Monday to talk about what's going on in all the veterans' homes. God, the sad story one after another, huh? I mean, I know you've talked to her about that, but
yes,
she's a dedicated lady and really one of the best. And I don't know if anybody else who's there at 5 in the morning giving people communion, do you? I mean, that's pretty special. Anyway, what's going on in your world? When you go by places, you see some strip malls that, like, there's nobody in those. Downtown, are we making any comeback here? What's going on in the retail market? Wherever you want to start, Nance.
I don't know that much about the retail market because that would be considered, like, commercial lending.
Even a strip mall, that all that stuff is all... If somebody buys a strip mall, they go to a commercial broker, not Audrey. I mean, I don't know if Audrey's ever sold one.
Correct. Okay. That's commercial... They have commercial brokers for that. They have commercial lenders for that, typically. Typically, they're banks, and then there are people that do it. Like, I know someone that does it who is not a bank, but it is commercial lending, and that's a different...
Are those mostly local
arena.
Banks? Those mostly local banks?
I mean, it would be considered... It'd be better if you did it with a local bank, I think. I think you'd have... less time because they want to develop their community. They want to see people moving in those places so that there's retail and then more people coming and then the more accounts open. So I believe that they would like that kind of business more than, you know, a bigger bank. But you could still go to like a Bank of America or Chase, Harris. I mean, they do have commercial lending as well, especially in a local branch. So... Downtown, you go downtown branch. I mean, it's important for them to keep the community going.
So right now we've had a little blip down in the mortgage rates. They came up a little bit again, but now they're still probably a little lower than they were.
They were more in the sevens. Now they're more in the sixes, 6.5 and above. It's unfortunate they dipped a little bit lower, but it didn't stay.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't stay. When was that? Like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago?
Yeah, and people wanted to... didn't want to lock because they were hoping to get down to the fives, and they said, well, it's going to go down now, and it didn't, which is very unfortunate because now people are saying, well, I should have locked. I mean, it just, they all want the rate they could have had.
What would be the what would be the trigger point for people who, you know, really, they're two more kids than when they bought the house and everybody's like using one bathroom? What would, like, 5 3/4 be a trigger point for some people to dash, or has it got to be lower than that?
Well, I think 5.99 is even a trigger.
Okay.
I do. I think that anything in the fives people are happy with. Now I can get the rate to 5.99, but there's going to be some extra money involved. There's going to be some points, but, you know, back in my day, points were a normal thing. They are not now. So, and then, of course, everybody's always waiting for the 3% rate, and that is just never going to happen.
You better wait about 3 lifetimes for that. You better get some life expanding drug for that to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So, and more people are retiring with mortgage debt. And that was always everybody's dream, not to have a mortgage when they retire, especially if they were going to retire. And I don't even know if that's a real possibility anymore.
How does the
average guy?
A nice enough dude to take. Give Audrey a ride over. She showed a house in Summit yesterday. And
how did it go?
I don't know. It was kind of a dead-end block, and at the end, there were about 10 cars piled up. Like, every car anybody ever owned was still there. I don't know. It's kind of a weird spot. I think Summit's kind of cool, but... well, the guy in the corner, the name of the place is El Famous Burrito. How many places in this country do you think are named El Famous Burrito? 1,000? Good Lord.
They're all famous.
They're all famous. No, it was, you know, I think the people kind of liked it. But I think what happened was the people who are in there think that they've remodeled it, and anybody who walks in thinks they're thinking of maybe starting to remodel it. There's kind of a spread there. Is that a fair way to put that without guessing?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
And, anyway, people seem very nice that they're looking, and so family likes Odd. So it was fine. It was a beautiful day, so... everything was cool, but I was stunned. She told me, I don't go anywhere near her stuff because Odd's really good at what she's doing. She doesn't mean me to mess it up. I was stunned. I think the house is, what's it listed for? What, 3.25? Odd thinks it's a little high. So say, pick a number, 290, 300. She goes, the taxes are almost $10,000.
That's getting to be the problem. I had someone Saturday afternoon, who said their taxes were used to be like, I don't know, $3,000, and now they're saying they were raised to $6,000. And I said, well, how did you find this out? Because the Cook County tax bills aren't out, and this is what everyone is afraid of. And she said that this happened at the end of last year, and now they're saying that, you know, what are they going to go up to now? So they felt they needed to refi to get some money out to do some things with, and I'm like, whoa. I mean, that is really spooky.
Well, there's a site, and I keep saying I'm going to go dig it out. If you just Google, you see the CPI numbers about every month, and we go through them, and John and I will go through them, and whatever, who's ever on the show that day. It's really hard to go back and try and find a line and, how that particular line went back, okay? But there is a site that does that. And if you put in their CPI history, owner's equivalent rent, you actually go to a site where they'll take that line and you go back like 30 or 40 years. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go back on owner's equivalent rent, I think I went even to, I don't know how far back I went. Man, it wasn't even that far. Maybe 2000. Which is far. And they've got it up. They've got your cost of home ownership up like, let's say it's doubled or something. Or it's up like 250 times. Not 250%. Yet I went back and looked, and in the last 10 years, I've got, since 2020, I've got housing prices up 45%. I've got homeowners insurance like almost tripled, and I've got taxes up 250%. So what in God's name are they counting on CPI? I mean, I mean the taxes here have to at least, have they almost doubled for anybody in the last 10 years? They have to. I've got more than that. I got them like almost three times.
All I can tell you is I see taxes. I don't know. And actually, Chicago seemed to be the least expensive of anybody's I've seen. The city of Chicago.
Yeah. I think they are too.
They're the cheapest of anybody I have seen. And then they say Cook County is bad. Cook County is nothing compared to Will, DuPage, all of the outlying suburbs. I just did somebody in Rockford. And I thought, well, this is really going to come in low. No. Bourbonnais, no. And I'm not sure what their counties are anymore, because I'm not as from, you know, I don't do that many in the outlying areas like Aurora and Bourbonnais and Rockford. Aurora wasn't too bad, but I'm just saying Bourbonnais is just as high as the outlying of Cook and the where Rockford was just as high as well.
What about the Chicago Heights phenomenon, where the houses are worth 150 and the taxes are 10?
I feel that just has to do with the community. I mean, Homewood is another one that has high taxes compared
Flossmoor
to the rest.
Flossmoor.
Flossmoor. I mean, Homewood and Flossmoor is beautiful layout. I drove through it. I couldn't believe it. I was like, holy cow. They had the original Aurelios there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Homewood. It was beautiful.
When I was a Ute, and they used to rank all the 1% or suburbs in Chicago, it was always Kenilworth, Flossmoor, then Winnetka. Or Wilmette, wherever one of them. Flossmoor was up.
I mean, I can see it.
Yeah, Flossmoor was like two or three on the list, weren't they, Jen?
Yeah, and just, you know, spectacular homes, you know, just rolling, you know, hill, trees, you know, it's one of the most beautiful suburbs.
Yeah, I thought Beverly was nice.
Oh, Flossmoor is way nicer than Beverly.
And Flossmoor was way nicer. I mean, I agree with Tom. I was very surprised to see that. And I think for the first time I saw it was like in September, and I was like, wow.
Well, this house is there. Well, this is a long time ago. Ed was telling me she was showing a house that was high threes. This is way before COVID, so before the prices ran up. And people look at me, what do you mean high threes? This place is worth like $1 million. And the taxes were what, Jen? 35 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, I know. And so when people complain about the taxes, I don't understand the correlation of how they get there, but Illinois does have higher taxes than Indiana, but the Indiana representatives for how they determine their taxes have been seen up at the Cook County trying to get advice on how to deal with getting higher taxes. So I don't understand, you know, I look at that Indiana like, I don't know, guys. I mean,
well, everybody looks at their assessment. It's not the assessment, it's a multiplier. They figure out how much they want. And they back into it, right, John? But you know, it's as much as people, you know, especially the conservative groups, totally take shots at the city of Chicago, one little piece that's always left out is, for every other municipality in the state, like I grew up in Evergreen Park, all right, so Evergreen Park, their pensions for all their teachers and those kinds of people, all those pensions, they contribute that money to a state pool. And once somebody retires from the teaching thing at Evergreen Park, the check does not come from the Evergreen Park pension pool. There's a gazillion municipalities in the state. That would be very, very hard to do. The state, it now comes from the state. And everybody in the state really kind of contributes to the court of everybody else's pension, which is a little weird. Now, in the city of Chicago, they have their own pensions. They're big enough. So in other words, as much as you might not like the teachers' union, they have their own pension fund that is funded by people here in Chicago. Same thing with the police and the fire and God knows who else, park district people. Well, in Chicago, you still pay to the state for all the other people's pension.
Right.
But the rest of the state doesn't pay, contribute to the Chicago teacher's pension. So as much as people like to rag on Chicago and say it's, you know, it's a bleep hole and these guys don't know what they're doing, they can't add up, that's a big deficit out of their stuff here that they're paying the other people, and those people aren't contributing here. So it puts a double whammy on the city of Chicago, right, Jen? I mean, it has to.
Yeah, yeah.
It does. I don't know how much it is, but it's a real number, and how many people even know that? Nobody?
Nobody. Well, and the other, outlying districts have, don't have what Chicago has in terms of population and business or whatever else to generate revenue. So their proportionate cost to support these pension plans is huge. Compared to people in Chicago, that's something that it isn't like it forces Chicago to manage its money any better.
No, but I mean, I guess it's a very technical question to you guys, or maybe Jimmy. Jimmy knows something about this stuff. Why? How big is the pool? When I say the pool, it looks to me, Nance and Jen and Jimmy, that the Chicago Heights, for instance, taxes are so high because the they've lost a whole bunch of businesses out there. The area is not so hot anymore. I mean, all the good restaurants have closed. I don't know if the Lincoln Square Mall was part of them or not. Some big mall closed.
Lincoln Mall.
Why? How central is that mall? I mean, I know in Evergreen Park, when Evergreen Plaza closed down, everybody's tax went way up. But why is the? I guess I'm saying if it's a countywide tax, how does a mall specific to Evergreen Park closing down cause that big of a tax increase in Evergreen Park? Wouldn't it be more of a blended rate to all the people around there, the Oak Lawn and all the... I guess I'm kind of curious as to how that works.
Lincoln Mall was in Madison.
But it was close enough. I'm saying it's close enough.
Yeah, but Madison had the benefit of having, an engine that generated revenue. And sales tax, everything that went into purchasing, stuff at Lincoln Mall, and movie tickets, whatever. This was it had a huge impact in making their businesses succeed and prosper, so that they were flourishing. They had money to fund their schools, infrastructure projects, just as a municipality, because they didn't have to look to their residents to generate those kinds of monies. From just property taxes, and there was some benefit to adjoining areas too. That cars that drove in there would do other things in the area, not necessarily just in Madison, but in Chicago Heights and Markham and places around there, by being out and about in that part of the county. So that there was a spillover effect, and Chicago Heights used to have tons of factories, lots of production, and it was a blue collar, gritty, urban area in microcosm, but all that's gone completely.
Well, let's just out of my curiosity, I'm sorry, guys, to drive you off on this, but if the Nancy, John, and Jim Lawler mortgage company all of a sudden becomes massive countrywide, and you decide to put a huge office facility in Evergreen Park, okay, and you build this thing and you're paying a whole bunch of property taxes and I guess there's not a lot of sales tax, but say you put a saloon downstairs and the thing's huge. What percentage of the property taxes and the sales taxes stay in Evergreen Park, and what goes to the county, what goes to the state? I'm sure Evergreen Park would benefit somewhat, but do they benefit?
Not exclusively.
Yeah. How much? I mean, it's got to be worth it to them, but is it worth it enough to where everybody else's tax in the whole village goes down or what? I mean, you don't get to keep 80% of it, do you? I mean,
they can pick and decide how much they keep. I think this is negotiable in tax levies and so on, where they kind of know what they can make off of these bigger businesses and things that are generating income for the entire metro area, but they're entitled to keep a certain fixed percentage of that. You can see that even in sales taxing in the city of Chicago, which is different depending on what part of the city you're in. So it's not this kind of flat rate. So.
Well, Nance, when somebody comes in, let's say one of us, Jim Lawler, me, or whoever, we come in and we say, all right, I want to buy this house. I want to get pre-approved, which is what you do for people. And Nancy is actually exceptionally good at this. I mean, how often does it happen where I come in and you say, hey, Chief, looks to me like you can afford a house up to like $80,000. I mean, well, wait a minute. Wait. But say you, that I can afford a house for $480 or something, and you've got me pre-approved for that. And I come in with a house at $480, and you go, it's where? The taxes there are $15,000. Guess what? You're not approved anymore. How often does that happen, or is it likely to start happening?
You know what, Tom? I ask the people up front where they want to go, and then I look up homes in that area to see what the taxes are, so I kind of can figure out.
Okay, so you're ahead of the game.
Correct,
right?
Amount. I don't just guess. Pie in the sky. I don't do that because once someone has seen what they want, it's very hard to unsee it because it's never, yeah, whatever you look at, it's always going to be held up to something you saw that you really wanted. So I had a couple who called who are paying $4,500 in rent in Chicago. And that's
I hope it was like an 8-bedroom house in Beverly or someplace.
No, it's a two-bedroom place.
Wow.
I mean, I think that's high. Now, I could be totally off the wall because I'm not familiar with what renting in Chicago is.
I think better have come with a health club and massages and everything else.
But anyways, they didn't want to go over like maybe, I don't know, let's say 600 or 700 was the number. They'd be, you know, better off staying in that number range. Well, they saw something that they liked for in the $800,000, $900,000 range, and everything they looked at after that compared to that. So I said, why don't we just focus on the one you liked? And they can't afford it, but they're going to, I think they're all in payment, all in, might be around $5,000 a month. And they were like, oh, is that all? I guess yeah. It's more like if you're used to $4,500 and then you go to $5,000, it's not a big deal. But to me, without any children, that's a high, more, you know, that to me is high, but they don't seem to, you know, that was perfectly fine with them. But I think it goes more with what you're used to paying in rent. And then I try to back into where it is they want to be.
So you haven't been stunned by the guy moved one village over or one town over and the tax rate's twice as much as you thought it would. You haven't had one of those yet.
No, I had one yesterday that stunned me. A woman called and said she's going to have to refinance because her ComEd pole fell down in her yard. And ComEd told her that since it's on her property, she has to replace the pole.
You got to be kidding me.
No. And I told her, I said, you know, it's a Sunday. I can't really find anything out for you too much. But I don't think you have to refinance. I mean, if let's just say you have State Farm insurance, you should have insurance for this.
And then how does that become your pull?
Yeah,
I'm missing that one.
On her property, it was not in the easement. So it was her pull. I asked her that specifically.
I bet if she called him up one day and said she was taking it down, it had a problem with it. Were there still wires on it?
Oh, yeah, they were live wires. And so ComEd came out, and they cut the power to her house and I think a neighbor's house. I think there's three houses involved in this mess that they cut the power. And they've told them, they laughed. They said it's their problem.
Right, so what if she says, I'm not fixing it? Nobody gets power over again?
It sounded like it. And so I said, you know, State Farm has a, let's say you did have State Farm or whatever. She happened to have State Farm. And I said, State Farm should have some kind of.
I got to believe this is a call to the alderman or the representative or somebody. What the hell?
And then I said, if not State Farm, I mean, I said, how much is a pole? I don't have a clue. What do you guys think? How much is a Con Ed pole?
I think it's a lot.
Yeah, for just the foundation.
I don't know. So I said, but State Farm would have.
It's a whole tree, for God's sake. Every one of those poles is a whole tree.
Well, they had said that State Farm has a lends money when the claims are crazy. You know what I mean? And you got to pay more than what they can pay out.
I got to believe this is a
Where's my home because of it.
This has got to be a call to Channel 9 or somebody.
It's unincorporated Markham.
Oh, Markham. They probably think they can do anything with anybody there.
So I was just shocked to hear this. Have you guys ever heard of this? Where it's the pole is your problem?
No.
I don't see how
they've got an easement. Commonwealth Edison must have an easement in Gross, as it's called, because it's, you know, that's how they serve their customers via this pole, and I think they're supposed to maintain it.
I was surprised too. I mean, I was left stunned, but this is one like where I just say, hey, we're not running to refinance. You have to do more homework on this. I mean, this is crazy.
I've never heard anything like that. I mean,
well, this doesn't sound right for me at all.
I wouldn't be surprised if they could try it.
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, but this is where, you know, like if you just apply online or bot or whatever, she'd be just going out getting a home, another mortgage to just satisfy this unknown amount.
That's
insane.
And no
one would ever tell her, hey, look, I don't think this is quite.
Why would anybody think that anybody living in Markham could possibly. Markham is an area that's not doing so hot. I guess I can put it that way. Anybody can afford so she could have gone out one day and just sawed the thing down and it would have been okay because it was hers?
They were saying it's not an easement and that it's not an easement. And it's on her property. Well, it's actually directly half between her property and her neighbor's property. But let's face it, Con Ed put it there.
Yeah.
To serve the community. So how can you say this?
I bet they could never have gotten a permit to remove it if it was really theirs.
Not without their consent. They're paying them off.
Yeah. Without dropping the wires.
Whoever gets a permit for anything. I mean,
well, whatever, drop the wires on your head.
Yeah, but now here's where, like, I'm different than everybody else. I said, oh, I wouldn't be doing this right now. I would definitely be looking into this. And she says, well, I have no power. And I was like, I understand that, but this is not.
Does she know how lucky she is?
I don't know how much it's going to be, but I can't imagine it being cheap.
Does she know how lucky everybody is that didn't hit somebody's house?
She's lucky. Like she said, her dogs were out. They were live wires just sizzling away. Well, you could hear them cracking. And it took them 4 hours to get out there.
We got a dash, but they decided there was a pole in my alley that was leaning to starboard a little bit, right? So instead of... So they bring this huge new pole out, and they put it by the church, and it's just sitting there. Well, they decide, well, they're not going to do it right away. They put up a half a pole, next to the pole that was already leaning, and put a big brace where they attached the new now half a pole, which is more weight, to the one that's already leaning, and it stood like that for like a year and a half before they decided to replace it. So they put more weight on the pole that was leaning before they decided, oh, I will pull that one out and we'll put the new one in. I'm like, what manner of engineer does, it didn't fall down, so I'll give them that, but you ever heard of something like that? These guys are bizarre. Anyway.
I don't understand it, because I'm sure does anybody have any idea what a pole would cost?
All right. I mean, well, I'll bet it's a whole tree, right? So just to get it there has got to be a couple of G, you know, maybe 10. Then you got to, if it fell over, part of it's still in the ground. It must have cracked. So you got to pull that one out of the ground. You got to dig a big hole deep enough, and then you got to stick the thing in there. You need a huge crane. I mean, it's not a small operation. The thing weighs a ton, literally. I mean, it is. It's a pole is like a 40-foot pine tree with the branches off, isn't it, Chad?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can see it. And some of these are trees. You know, they started out with.
Yeah. It's anyway. Nance, good to see you. Hey, I hear you're mobile.
Sort of. I went Saturday. I went to a pumpkin patch with, and met my brother's grandchildren. And they had sand down for the rides and stuff. It was a very nice place. It was up in Barrington. It was really, really nice. And I was walking in the sand, and all of a sudden I started feeling the pain shooting up my arm.
Well, you're way better than you were a couple of months ago.
Someone said, well, couldn't you just take, like, you know, some painkillers? And I'm like, I'm allergic to them. I said, I just can't. I mean, I stayed till noon, and then I said, I really do have to go. And I sat all day with icing and heating.
Well, so you're gaining on it.
I was mobile, and now I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know. Flat surfaces might be a little bit better.
Well,
but just they let me take the sling off, and the walking, you know, I never realized this, but I guess your arm kind of like, I don't want to use the word sway, but slings, maybe sway.
You feel the weight, you know, yeah.
And my arm is turning black and blue in the shoulder area. So I was surprised. Big shocker.
Well,
I wish you well, Nancy.
Yeah, man, there's some progress.
But there is progress. I mean, they told me I have a release date in January.
Release to do
so,
what?
So, John, I guess I can go out, but I can't do anything.
Oh, man. That's 3 months, my God.
That's 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months and she had it done.
Jesus, my God.
Oh, yeah, God. 6 months.
Who knows? Maybe John will be out by then, you know?
Yes.
Hey, how would you like to sit in that 90-degree heat for 4.5 hours in a ridiculous Irish game Saturday?
Oh, my God.
Boy, talk about cruel and unusual. Okay. And they called a penalty in every play to make it worse.
I know.
God.
I just have one question. What is it that they sang at the end?
What is what?
What song? They all got on the field.
Oh, they sing Notre Dame, Our Mother. It's kind of a religious
song. Yeah, the alma mater.
The alma mater.
Okay, do you guys all learn that in the school or what?
Well,
we had to learn that.
Well, you learn it, but it's not all that hard to learn. You know.
No, and they sing it at special occasions. They never used to sing it at football games.
Oh, that's something new. That's the last decade or so. Yeah. Who started that?
Somebody said, what are they singing? I'm like, I don't know.
I wish, Nance, I mean, I know you're very stealthy, or you can take Jimmy with you. He's very stealthy. Burn those green uniforms. God, are they ugly.
Well,
what did Kevin say? They look like Kermit the Frog, green tops and bottoms.
Well, did you see them when they had the green and gold when they first started? That was nice.
Well, I can go with the green jerseys or something, but you put the pants on too. It looks like they're playing for Oregon or something. It's a Nike.
A leprechaun. School.
Yeah, oh God.
Yeah, leprechaun. That's what they were saying. But the green top. They originally showed what it started. It was a green top and the gold bottoms and a gold helmet. And that looked nice.
Yeah, well, they're not doing that. I don't know where they got the green thing going, but I guess they got to sell some green pants in the bookstore. Nance, thank you. Hope they'll see you this weekend, maybe. SB Futures up 20. NASDAQ Futures up 202. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
Are you nuts?